Disclaimer, if you are a parent and you generally listen to the Wednesday conversation with kids in the room, we are going to talk in this podcast about some things that relate to human sexuality and that are somewhat sensitive. And so this might be more of an earbud podcast than a in the minivan or in the living room kind of a podcast. So just want to give you a heads up on that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastors Bob Thune and Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemelman of First City Church in Bellevue, Nebraska. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about contraception, part three.
Part three. This podcast is live, fellas. These topics are getting lots of feedback from folks.
Yeah, thanks to all the listeners for sending in tweets, emails, messages,
questions, comments, feedback. It's been really good, and I can tell that this is hitting a nerve in terms of things that people are thinking about, want to be thinking about, and need help thinking in a Christian way about. Let me begin this podcast by clarifying. I want to clarify. This is the great thing about doing a podcast every week is you can go back and say, yeah, I said this last week, but I need to clarify it. So I've gotten emails from a couple doctor friends who wanted to make sure that we're as clear as possible on what we've said about various forms of contraception. Okay, so we talked about chemical birth control and IUDs as well in a previous podcast. And I want to read you, I'm going to read from an email from a friend of mine who is a doctor. She is a woman. She is deeply knowledgeable on these things. And she wanted us to be as precise as possible in how we describe them. So here you go. Hormonal or chemical contraceptives try to prevent ovulation and decrease sperm mobility to try to prevent fertilization of an egg. But the final mechanism of action that makes the pill so close to 100% effective as a contraceptive agent is that it makes the uterus as hostile an environment as possible and thus prevents implantation of a fertilized egg, as anyone who has conceived or had an ectopic pregnancy while taking the pill can testify. So she's pointing out that the pill actually has three mechanisms of action, and she wanted to be clear that, because I said on the last podcast that the pill prevents an egg from implanting in the uterus, she's pointing out that's not the only way it works. It does try to work by two other mechanisms first, but that's the sort of final mechanism of action. So the problem with that is if you were taking the pill, you never know, is pregnancy being prevented because it's keeping sperm from fertilizing the egg or because an egg was fertilized but not implanted? And it's that lack of knowledge that creates ethical problems. She goes on to mention this as far as IUDs, quote, copper IUDs work by thinning the uterine wall lining to prevent implantation of a fertilized egg. There are also hormonal IUDs that work by combining the thinning of the uterine lining to prevent implantation of a fertilized egg with the release of hormones to try to prevent ovulation and slow sperm movement to try to prevent it from reaching the egg. So both types of IUDs also use various methods of thinning the uterine wall lining. One is the primary method, and one of them, hormonal IUDs, use that as a secondary method, but both of them do that. And so what that means is that both these forms of contraception, for Christians who believe that life begins at conception, these become then morally problematic. And so, guys, I realize for some listeners, this is the first time they've ever heard this or thought about this because, you know, these aren't the kinds of things that all doctors talk about. Chris, you mentioned you have a brother-in-law, right, who's a Christian doctor. And so Christian doctors often do describe these things, but many doctors are just like, oh, you need birth control, here you go. And they're not going to tell you the mechanisms by which it works. And so unless you're real into reading the fine print, listeners may not even know that this is how these forms of birth control function. So having given those clarifiers so that you understand the full mechanism of action for both chemical, hormonal birth control, and various forms of IUDs, today on the podcast, we have a special guest, Jen Newman.
Dun, 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 hey,
Jen.
Dun,
dun.
Jen
guys.
Newman is on the podcast.
Is this your first time on the podcast?
This is my first time on the podcast.
Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. Wait, Mike, would you tell her that?
Jen, welcome to the Wednesday
there
Conversation.
Thanks, Mike.
So Jen Newman, man, plays so many vital roles. Here's the background on Jen. She is my executive assistant, works on staff at Coram Deo, former member of Coram Deo, helped to plant First City Church. Most importantly to this conversation, she's a doula, works with Omaha Birth Connection. Can you tell, by the way, cool little business started by someone in our church. What does Omaha Birth Connection do, Jen?
Yeah, Omaha Birth Connection wants to provide any services necessary to women who are pregnant and or who have already given birth. So we want to connect women to postpartum doulas, to labor doulas, and provide any other services that could help them through labor, delivery.
Basically, if you're a mama and you're going to give birth to a baby, these folks want to come around you and make that as rich and as meaningful an experience as possible and
yes.
help to support that, right?
Yes.
Childbirth and child rearing.
Yep.
So really cool. And Jen is with child right now.
Yes. So there are actually are six people here
there
for
are
the
actually,
Wednesday conversation.
There are actually six of us here today. And so we're going to, I mean, a lot of the response we got was, hey, I'd love to hear a woman talk about contraception just because obviously this is a much more of a personal topic for women because it's affecting their body week to week, month to month. And so that's also true for husbands, of course, but in a different way. And so because of how embodied this is for women. And so, Jen, we wanted to talk. Because we work alongside Jen and because we have a pretty open office and we talk about all kinds of stuff related to life and theology, I happen to know that Jen and her husband, Ryan, have practiced a fertility awareness method of birth control and contraception, which not a whole lot of folks know about. I mean, it's getting more and more popular, but there's a lot of people probably listening to this podcast who have misconceptions about how this works. And I want to sort of raise awareness, especially as we talk about contraception, that there are very natural and normal methods of contraception that work with the body instead of against it. And so we brought Jen on because, Jen, I was hoping you could talk from your firsthand experience about why you and Ryan chose to use this method, what you enjoy about it. And you've obviously used it in two ways. You've used it to prevent conception and to allow conception. And so for that reason, I think you can talk from both sides of that. Because a lot of the questions we're getting, especially from young couples, are like, hey, how do I think through this and how do I make a wise decision here? And isn't it true that this method doesn't actually work? And like, you know,
right.
it can't actually function as a way of preventing conception. So Jen, the floor is yours. Talk to us about fertility awareness methods or FAM.
Or FAM. Yeah. So when my husband and I got engaged and started thinking about family planning and what that would look like for us for the first couple of years, or as we started to try for children, I started to do a lot of research on different forms of birth control, whether it were, hormonal or different barrier methods or the what I came to hear about the fertility awareness method. And I knew like the hormonal stuff, putting chemicals into my body just didn't sit well with me. And I wasn't even thinking about the abortive nature of different hormonal birth control pills, but I just knew that I didn't want to put something foreign in my body at all. So we moved from there as, okay, what are my options then? There are different barrier methods that would be an option. So that would be like a condom or a female condom. And there are a wide range of things that people can use. And then I had a friend say, well, you should read this book called Taking Charge of Your Fertility. And
excellent book.
Yes, excellent book. People call it the Bible for the fertility awareness method. So I started to read it and was amazed at how much I didn't know just about my body, period. Like not even trying to have kids, not even trying to prevent, how much I did not know about my body as a woman hormonally. And so what I started to learn is that from the time a young girl gets her period, her body every 28 days or so goes through a natural flow of hormones. So she has her period, she has a surge of estrogen, she releases an egg, and then she has a surge of progesterone, and then that egg is probably not fertilized, and so she sheds her uterine lining, and that's her period, and it starts over. And that's what goes through every single cycle. And so started to learn that, gosh, there are these other things that I've noticed about my body that it's just always been doing this. And so I became really intrigued with the fertility awareness method because it seemed like the best way Ryan and I could work with my body and what it was doing, what it's meant to do and what it's always done, rather than against it, trying to change or alter that. So, so fertility awareness method, people call it the symptothermo method as well. So we observe my fertility signs throughout the month. That means, I'm observing my cervical fluid. And so that is telling me when my cervical fluid changes throughout the month, as far as what would be a happy environment for sperm to live in and to fertilize an egg. And then I'm also taking my temperature. So before I ovulate, my waking temperature at about the same, I wake up about the same time every morning, take my temperature, is going to be lower. And then as I ovulate, it will rise and be high for the rest of my cycle, confirming that I've ovulated.
Do you want to talk about that really cool thermometer? You did like a Kickstarter campaign for this high level thermometer. That's
yes, there's a free app to track your cycle. It's called Kindara. Kindara made a thermometer that is called the Wink, and it is so smart. It syncs with your phone. You take your temperature and it sends
super,
it.
This is not like low tech. This is super high tech.
Super high tech.
Fertility awareness.
Super
right here.
Smart. Whoa. So a lot of the pushback you get for the fertility awareness method is like, well, gosh, isn't it guesswork? You don't really know. But when practiced correctly, it can be just as effective as birth control pill, condoms, whatever.
Yeah, in fact, I'm looking at a medical study on my computer right now that says when used correctly, it's 98% effective. So that's as effective or more effective than most barrier methods and as effective as the pill when practiced correctly. And that's probably the catch.
We have some good friends that have used this method, and they have 4 kids now, and she's such a guru at it. She has perfectly timed their kids 2 years apart. Their kids' birthdays all are like within a week of each other. So she's kind of a guru in this. So
this works when you do it right.
Yeah.
So you get to know your body, which I really appreciated being able to do that even before we were married, so I started talking about it then to single women, like, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we getting to know our bodies before we are married, even if we never get married? Because if I have a short luteal phase at the end, which is after you've ovulated to when your period comes, I might be low in progesterone, or I could actually have cycle after cycle where I'm not confirming ovulation. And so it can actually help determine like whole health as well, which I was really encouraged by. So it's not just for married people or people who are trying to conceive or even not. So that's something I've really enjoyed about it. And like just for our family as well, I mean, it just becomes like normal conversation. So we're just like,
how's your cervical fluid?
We're just
today?
Like going to bed, and Ryan's like, so condom or no condom tonight? And he knows, like, are you fertile or are you not fertile? And so, like, it's a conversation that is happening between both of us, which I think is important because the pill or other types of barrier methods, it can largely fall on just being the woman's responsibility. Mm. And so I think it's been really special for us to share that and for him to understand where my body is throughout the month and work with that with me.
That's really good, Jen. Would you also encourage listeners in light of, man, that just all of that, what you said feels kind of clunky. It feels like a lot of work. It feels kind of cumbersome. And then also, would you speak more to what that communication looks like between you and your husband? Because not everybody is that open, right? Like even within marriage, there's lots of privacy in those areas. So what would your encouragement be beyond what you just said?
Yeah. So it does seem like there's a lot of things to track or things to figure out. And I will say that it is a process to learn and become comfortable with, because there are rules to follow to make sure you practice it correctly. It's not basically just, oh, we avoid a few days around day 14 because you could ovulate on day 10, you could ovulate day 18, whatever. So it does take a while to become comfortable with it. But I think, gosh, once you get to that point, it's totally second nature.
And how long did it take you, do you feel like, to sort of get to the place where you really felt comfortable?
Yeah, I think I tracked stuff for about 5 months before we got married. And then I think the first like 3 months were a little scary of like, oh gosh, I don't know if it's like, if I gave us enough time or stuff like that. But after that, it's like, it's so comfortable. And I mean, you're taking your temperature in the morning and you're just observing your cervical fluid at some point during the day. That's just as much a commitment as making sure you take the pill at the same time every morning if you're just waking up and taking your temperature. So it's very easy if you're just willing to commit to that. Okay, to touch on your second question, Dusty, about like comfortability and communication with my husband, I think that I was raised to be comfortable talking about bodily functions. And so period being just one of those bodily functions that it just, it happens, it's a part of life, and it's nothing to be ashamed of or to hide. And so even as like Ryan and I were dating and engaged, he knew what choices I was making in regards to just my cycle, not even reproduction. So that includes like, I mean, there are choices for pads or tampons or diva cups.
You're sending him to Target for that?
He did not go to Target for that.
Chris just got uncomfortable.
Chris is uncomfortable, but I am not uncomfortable talking about this at all. So, I mean, okay, so if a woman uses a diva cup, that is different than using a tampon. And so that was something that we had to talk about of like, this is a choice that I'm making. It might affect our day or whatever. So it was a conversation, please.
I don't
Chris.
Even want to ask what a diva cup is.
Don't.
The women who are listening, they know, even if they don't
They're
use
laughing
it.
Right now.
And they can't believe I just said it to all of you guys.
Multiple times. You said it multiple times.
No shame. No shame.
That I'm squirming will not surprise me. She's, I yes, this stuff makes me squirm sometimes. So I'll own it.
Yes. So it does not make me squirm. So Ryan and I have always just been able to talk about that period. And so as we got engaged, the conversation of birth control just was open and easy. And so I think that just flowed into our marriage of like, this isn't going to be something that is private or just mine. This is something we're choosing to do together. Whether it's avoiding getting pregnant or trying to get pregnant, this is going to be, we're on the same page. And so it's been an easy conversation.
For people who are skeptical, Jen, even after they listen to you talk and say, you know, well, the advantage of something like the pill is it's, you don't have to think about it other than just taking it, and it doesn't affect spontaneity, and you can, you know, you can have sex whenever you want. So for people who sort of are coming from that point of view, what would you try to persuade them of like, hey, actually this method is better?
Yeah. Mike and I were talking about this earlier, and I said, I wanted to be unapologetic about saying that I think this is the best option for women, for their health and for honoring their bodies and for honoring God and honoring their husbands and wives doing this together. So for ease or spontaneity or what it might affect that, like as you grow comfortable with it, there's a wide part of your cycle that you can be spontaneous in.
Good. Yeah.
And also I would say like, you have like your beginning of your cycle where you know you're not going to be fertile. You have your middle cycle where your signs are lining up and saying conception could be a possibility. And then afterwards, the two windows where you know conception is not possible, I think tend to be more full of freedom and more excitement.
Yeah.
Because you're not worried about what could happen in the middle if you're trying to avoid pregnancy. And so I think for us, it's definitely changed those two sides of the cycle of like, this is like really fun because we know exactly where we're at and we're able to even almost like play more.
Well, here's the amazing thing is it actually helps husbands have to develop the right kind of self-control, right? Because I think the downside, if you think about the sexual revolution, the downside of the pill is it puts all the onus on a woman to sort of be the one who's taking hormones and chemicals into her body, and it sort of advantages a man to say, well, I don't have to think about it, right? And actually a more biblical, ethical, unified sort of responsibility is to say, no, a husband and wife are together responsible for making decisions about fertility, and that requires a husband to practice knowledge and self-control, and it requires a wife to understand and know her body, and there it's really unity building rather than just sort of we use the language of quote unquote freedom at the expense of actually honoring one another, knowing one another, and partnering together. So it's interesting because I feel like there's a couple different poles to this conversation. As we've started this podcast, this series of podcasts, we've been focusing primarily on the ethical side of things of just, are we thinking Christianly about these topics and acknowledging that chemical forms of birth control and IUDs function by abortive means or can function by abortive means creates some serious ethical issues for Christians. So what that leaves open then, if we're going to talk about contraception, is barrier methods or fertility awareness methods as probably the two that we can embrace with the least issues of conscience, with the most ethical freedom. And so I want to acknowledge that and just say I want to say the ethical questions need to be foundational here, because we're saying something about what's right and wrong when it comes to human life. But Jen, you're also bringing in sort of the medical and self-knowledge aspect of things and saying that actually a method like fertility awareness method helps a woman get to know her body in ways that can really be helpful for fuller issues of health and wholeness.
So another thing that you had mentioned, Bob, a couple of weeks ago on the Wednesday conversation was how physicians are starting to give young girls birth control for acne problems or other issues that help control their cycle if they have a heavy cycle or a light cycle. And that, it frustrates me to no end, because first off, hormonal birth control does not level out or normalize your cycle. It shuts down your body's natural flow of hormones and mimics a cycle. And so we don't really know what that's going to do, like you said a couple of weeks ago, to young girls who decide to go off it after 10, maybe 15 years of just being on birth control and when they decide to start having kids. And so I just want to challenge people as physicians or their doctors offer this as an option to really think about what the long-term implications could be and if there are other options that they could turn toward to level out their cycle or make it lighter if it's painful or if there's other issues, that this should not be the default option for young girls who are having issues with their cycles.
So Jen, is there anything else you'd say about just the ways that you've experienced this be a blessing to you, just apart from ethics, just in terms of like self-knowledge or self-awareness or freedom from things like medicines coursing through your body, et cetera. What do you particularly appreciate about just the sort of personal side of this form of birth control?
Yeah, so practicing this method has definitely given me a more holistic picture of my health and my body and of our marriage, and it's helped us grow our family. And so as soon as we decided that we wanted to start trying for kids, I mean, we knew exactly what my body was already doing. And so we knew when to time sex at that time to try for conception. And it took 4 months. And so if it had taken longer, I would have even been able to go to a doctor and say, this is what my body's been doing for the last 2-3 years, which is really helpful. And not a lot of women know. I mean, I've talked to women who have struggled to conceive and have gone through different treatments and have tried to get to talk to them about like the particularities of their cycle that they just don't know. And doctors are assuming. And so I really appreciate how it's helped me know my body and also helped Ryan and I communicate through this whole thing. It's quite the process.
Jen, where can people go? You mentioned one book. Is that the primary book you'd recommend, or where can people go to find out more about this?
Yeah, I would recommend Taking Charge of Your Fertility. It's like a textbook, and so it has quite a bit of information. And Kindara really is the best app for tracking your cycle, and they have a website and a blog that really walks through how to track your cycle in like simple terms. And then just to find somebody that also practices it, like I would love to talk to anybody who is interested in learning more or is skeptical or who has just heard that natural family planning is guesswork. I want to just help dispel any of that and be as helpful as I can. So find somebody who does it. That's the easiest way to learn, is to come alongside somebody and have the weirdest questions to ask somebody ever.
Yes. So if you want to email podcast@comaha.com, just email and say, hey, can I have Jen's contact info? And Mike will kick that to you and you can contact Jen directly in that regard. So if you're listening and you're like, hey, actually, I would like to talk to someone, I want to make sure you avail yourself of that opportunity to connect with Jen. My wife and I have a friend who's also sort of a guru with this method, and we've had some weird conversations. You know, you just get down into some real deep details, but it's been really helpful to know, like, actually, this person's kind of an expert on this. Like, they're kind of a freakish guru, and they know lots of stuff about this, which has been really helpful as we've pursued sort of investigating and thinking about this.
Yeah, Jen, super appreciate your insight, because you have a holistic approach to not just contraception, but sexual intimacy, and also doing all of that with a God-honoring conscience. And so I think the holistic approach is super helpful to listeners. I've been learning stuff just sitting here next to you.
If you want to do internet research, factsaboutfertility.org is a good website that is grounded in all of these fertility awareness methods. And so you can start there. I'd recommend the book, because it's going to be way more detailed, but the website is a good place to start just to learn. And to go back to sort of the theological and spiritual implications of this conversation, we said in the first podcast, Christians ought to seek to work with the body rather than against the body, because what that does is it receives our bodies. It honors us as embodied beings. And one of the places where our culture doesn't think very well is we don't think about what it means to be an embodied being, and that God has given us the bodies we have and has made them function the way they do for a reason. So I think there's, as Christians think through these questions, they need to think about, what does it look like to work with my body instead of against it? And I want to reiterate, if you're using another method of birth control right now, the goal of these podcasts isn't to like create shame, but hopefully to create awareness, hopefully to make you step back and ask some questions and go, I need to reevaluate or think through this in more detail. Because I think that, as we shared before, that's the story of all of us sitting around the tables kind of going, well, I used to be okay with this, but now that I've done some more research, I'm not sure I should be. And that's what I imagine will be happening for lots of folks as they listen, is just stepping back and asking some of these broader questions. Also, in our culture, it's a little bit countercultural, and you should embrace that as a good thing. Our culture, because of the influence of sort of radical feminism, doesn't want to invite women to think about the complications or implications of various forms of birth control. In fact, there's, you know, in general, the easiest and sort of simplest thing to do is put people on the pill. And you got to realize, right, there's capitalist motives there that makes pharmaceutical companies money. It's easy for doctors to prescribe. If you think about public health, it's just easy to say, oh, well, if everybody's on the pill, then we can count on these sort of, you know, these sort of social realities. And as Christians, that's another thing I think we sort of want to be countercultural and push against, is just to say, let's not do what everybody's doing just because everybody's doing it. Let's be the kind of people who are stepping back and going, what honors the Lord, and what different decisions should we make because of our convictions and where we come from in terms of understanding of God and self.
Yeah, and this tends to be a weird battle for women, especially as they're seeing their physicians. I mean, before we got married, my physician asked me, and so what are you guys going to do for birth control? And I said, we're going to practice the fertility awareness method. And she said, so you'd be okay if something happened, right? And I said, I mean, sure, but I hopefully plan to practice it correctly and have it be effective. And so there are going to be hard conversations and hard pushback, because it's not the easier option for people to pick.
That's really helpful to know. And so that even more important than to have a community of women you can lean on for wisdom to sort of help you think about this, because it sounds like some doctors probably aren't going to see that as a great choice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to end the podcast with a piece of data you may not want to know. But I'm reading off a website, and I'm actually reading from the World Health Organization list of carcinogens. Hormonal birth control is on the World Health Organization list of group 1 carcinogens, next to things like tobacco, asbestos, and the active ingredient of sulfur mustard, which is used in chemical warfare.
Oh my gosh.
No one's going to tell you that. And again, there's a lot of...
But Bob Thune will on the Wednesday conversation. No, keep going.
Yeah, and I'm reading from an article on the Public Discourse that's written by an MD, PhD. And again, these are the kinds of... This data is out there, but there's a lot of pressure societally to sort of keep it from being in plain view. And when you realize, hormonal birth control can have some serious side effects. And that, I'm not saying it's going to in every case, but I just think, gosh, if it's not a listed carcinogen, that's one of those things, might want to not ingest that into my body for 40 or 50 years. And so, again, I'm not giving you that data just to sort of, you know, just to be provocative, but because I think it's important to understand these things. So the internet's a wonderful thing. Start doing research and you will find that you can learn a lot about these various forms of contraception, and a lot that you probably need to dig for and look for to help make wise and informed decisions. I want to encourage you, if you do have feedback, questions, or you want Jen to come back on and answer other questions or talk more about various things this stirs up, I hope you'll send us an email. It's been really fun to sort of receive listener feedback and go, oh, there's a nuance we didn't talk about, or there's a question we need to answer. So we want to invite that same kind of feedback.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own churches for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we talked about today might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Like Bob said, shoot us an email at podcasts@cdomaha.com and give us a review on iTunes. That helps us get the word out to more people to hear about things like contraception and the Benedict option and other things that we've talked about. So join us next week for another Wednesday conversation.